shares, and we do other stuff. So it's just a case of just thinking, how did we get here and why did we get here and how does it work? What keeps us sober, and what inspires us? I know when I first got sober, I come to AA and it was trying to understand the illness that I've suffered with and the solution that we've got and how do I apply it? How does it work? How do I m maintain my sobriety? And I'm 23 years sober by just working the 12 steps and carrying the message of AA. But what I've done, I've got a sponsor that's an archivist in the UK, and he works a lot at Dr. Bob's house and for the Akron head office. So I got involved with the history a little bit, and we discuss it sometimes about how it started and why did it start. And just to do a little brief run through, Bill Wilson, in Bill's story, spoke about Bill Wilson getting sober, and on his first visit to the town's hospital, he got sober, and when Dr. Silver explained to him that we suffer with an allergy to alcohol, Bill Wilson said, "That's great. Self-knowledge will fix it. Now I know what I've got. I just won't drink." And he didn't realize that he suffered with this mental obsession that kept justifying the next drink. And invariably, after a very short period of time, Bill got drunk again. And he went back to the hospital again. And he sat in the hospital and he said that fear sobered him for a bit because he knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to die drunk and he could not stay sober for love nor money. And eventually, when he, the second time he left town's hospital, Ebbie Thatcher turned up at his house. And Ebbie Thatcher was an old school friend of his. And Bill always said, "If I ever get as bad as Ebbie, as drunk as Ebbie, throw in a room and lock away the key. Just don't send me out. I'd never be as bad as Ebbie," because he was a chronic alcoholic. Ebbie couldn't stay sober for love nor money. Anyway, Ebbie got sober. Ebbie went to court one day. I'm going to give a brief history. Ebbie was a drunk, and his father said to him, "Go to the old summer house in Vermont." And he went to the summer house, and he painted the summer house. And Ebbie was sitting at the side of it, drinking a couple of beers, and some birds and pigeons flew over, and they had a crap on the side of the lodge, and Ebbie was pissed off. So he went inside, got the shotgun, and he fired at the pigeons and shot the pigeons. And eventually, the highway patrol turned up and arrested him. And Ebbie went to court. Now, Ebbie was a chronic alcoholic. He couldn't stay sober. So Ebbie goes to court and he's in the courtroom. And the judge was going to sentence Ebbie to go to jail. But three guys turned up from what they called the Oxford Group. It was Seabrook Greaves, Shep Cornell, and Roland Hazard. Roland Hazard is in chapter two of the big book. And they said to the judge, "Don't send him to jail. Give him to us and we're going to take him to the Oxford Group and we're going to sober him up. And we're going to find him a way out and give this guy a better life than he's ever lived." And they took Ebbie to the Oxford Group and they sobered him up. And within 6 weeks, Ebbie had wondered what happened to his friend Bill Wilson, because Bill Wilson was always drunk, couldn't stay sober. And he made a phone call, and Bill's story speaks about the phone call that he took. And he said it was nice to hear that cheery voice of an old school friend. And Ebbie asked if he could come over. And Bill said, "Yeah, come over." So he went to Bill's house on page 9 of the big book, and he spoke about when Bill opened up the front door, and he said Ebbie stood there fresh skinned. He said his eyes were on fire. There was something inexplicably different about Ebbie because Ebbie was sober. And this is the first time that Bill had seen sober, Ebbie sober, all of his life. And they sat down at the kitchen table, and Bill pushed him across a glass of gin, and Ebbie refused it. And Bill said, I'm aghast. I'm shocked. How can he refuse to drink that he's always drunk?" Because Ebbie had a solution to recover from alcoholism. And Bill wondered what had happened to him. He said, "I wonder what happened to the old fellow. He wasn't himself. He was on fire." So Ebbie sat there and he said about how three guys had turned up in court and they took him through a religious program of action, and he hasn't had a drink since. And that's been 6 weeks. And Bill wondered how he got that. What was that program he'd done? How did he do it? Because Bill wanted to seek escape with the desperation of drowning men, but he didn't know how to. He couldn't stay sober. He knew he had an allergy to alcohol, but he could not stay sober. So Ebbie took him and said to him, I went to the Oxford Group and I found God and I prayed to God." And Bill was shocked because he was a non-believer. Bill was an agnostic. His grandfather had said to him, "Don't believe in God. Don't sign that temperance pledge." And Bill never did, and nor did his sister Dorothy. Eventually, Bill went back to the hospital for the last time, and he spoke about that in December 11th, 1934. And he laid in that hospital bed for the last time, and Ebbie came and visited him again. And he took him what we now know as the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he'd done it in the course of a day. And Bill believed that he had a flash of light, a spiritual experience. Something had happened in that room that day that Bill couldn't explain. And Ebby had left, and Bill sat there. And the doctor came into the room, and Bill said to the doctor, "Doctor, something has happened. There's something different." And the doctor looked at him and said, "Bill, there's something different about you. Whatever's happened, you better keep it. And you better tell others exactly what has happened to what we now know is to carry the message." And Bill left Towns Hospital, and he tried to sober up some drunks, but he failed on many occasions. A lot of them got drunk, and one guy had hung himself in his basement. And eventually Bill went to Akron, and we know the story, some of the story about going to Akron, and Bill goes to Akron to see Dr. Bob. He went on a business venture, that's what happened, and the business venture fell through, and Bill was in the Mayflower Hotel in Akron. And he said in his story, he said that the gay chatter in the bar was warming, and he wanted to go there. But he knew if he went to the bar, he'd get drunk. And he knew if he'd get drunk, he could die, because he couldn't stay sober. So he picked up the telephone directory and he went through a list of names, and he came up with a guy called Reverend Tunks, Walter Tunks. And he took a phone call to this reverend, and he said, "I'm an alcoholic from New York. I need to talk to another drunk." And this Reverend Tunks said, "I'm just a person." And he put him onto a woman called Henrietta Seiberling, who was part of the Firestone group. And Bill went to meet Dr. Bob. And when Dr. Bob went to meet this guy, Dr. Bob said, "You know what? I'm going to give this clown 20 minutes." Because Dr. Bob was hungover. It was Mother's Day over there in America. And he didn't want to see him. He just wanted a drink, because Dr. Bob could not stay sober. 3 weeks prior to this meeting, the Oxford group, Dr. Bob was a part of the Oxford group. And they called a special meeting for Dr. Bob because he was a chronic alcoholic and he couldn't stay sober. And they called this meeting, and it was run by Henrietta Seiberling and 30 of the Oxford group members, a bit like the fellowship we got in AA. And they called this special intervention meeting for Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob stood up and he said, "You know what, I'm a serious drinker and I cannot stop." And he went round the room, and Henrietta said to Dr. Bob, "Do you want us to pray for you?" And he said, "Yes, please." So they all got on their knees, 30 members of the Oxford group, and they prayed for Dr. Bob to get sober. And they prayed for 1 month, and within them 3 weeks, Bill Wilson had turned up in Akron, and he'd gone to the hotel, and now he's in the gate lodge or the gatehouse in Akron, talking to Dr. Bob. And before he got there, the phone call went from Henrietta Seiberling, and Reverend Tunks had said to Henrietta, "There's an alcoholic here from New York, and he's come to help Dr. Bob." And Henrietta cried her heart out, because for 3 weeks they've been praying for somebody to come and help Dr. Bob. And she believed that her prayers were answered through God. And she phoned up Dr. Bob's wife. She said, "Anne, there's a guy here who's been sent by God to save Dr. Bob, to save Bob." And they met, and for 5 hours, Bill Wilson explained to the doctor, "This is the problem." Because even though Dr. Bob was a doctor, he didn't understand what alcoholism was or the solution to it. He couldn't apply it into his life, and he kept getting continually drunk. And Bill told him that he explained about the obsession and explained about the allergy, and Dr. Bob knew it made good sense. And at that point, then Bill Wilson moved in with Dr. Bob and spent 6 months in Dr. Bob's house. And within 2 weeks, they're in another hospital, sobering up the first one, a guy called Bill Dotson. And they carried the message to Bill D on a man in the bed that were here, the picture in AA. And they sobered this guy up, and he stayed sober. And that was June 26, 1935. And that was AA number 3 that stayed sober. But in the early years of AA, loads died. Loads of people died, and they didn't make it, because it was a learning curve for Alcoholics Anonymous, for us to get sober. How do we carry the message? Now, Bill didn't know. They was all winging it. And as he got sober, Bill was the longest one sober. So he sponsored everybody. He sponsored the first woman. And then they would relapse, and they kept sponsoring each other. And Bill and Dr. Bob were the only two that stayed sober, 3 that stayed sober at that point. And eventually, Bill knew we needed to get a fellowship. We needed to have something more substantial. Now, Bill could have just kept the message to himself. He could have said, "Thanks, Dr. Bob. Thanks for getting me sober. I'll see you later." And there would never have been no AA. We would never have no Zoom, no meetings, no recovery, no literature. We'd have nothing. But Bill Wilson wasn't like that. This guy was dedicated for his whole life to give everything that he had and his heart and soul to Alcoholics Anonymous, to sober up other drunks. And he would go around the bars and drag guys out that he thought were alcoholics, and he took them back to his house, and he would wash them, and he would clothe them, he would feed them, and he would feed them and try and get them sober. But not all of them stayed sober. So eventually he got AA together. They started having meetings. We had meetings within the Oxford group. The Oxford group was a group of first century Christians. That was their group. They wasn't alcoholics. We had a little side group that were the AA members, and they eventually left, and we formed the meetings of AA. And from that point then, it was in the members' huts. So Alia would have a meeting, and there'd be all the AA members would come to Alia's house, and the women and the wives would put on the sandwiches and the food and the drink and the coffee. They would put the ashtrays, they would set the room up for the AA members. In them days, the majority were guys, and they would sit down, they would take their hour and 2 hour meeting, and they talk about recovery, how to recover from, how do we stay sober? What do we have to do? What lengths have we got to go to? And at the end of the meeting, the wives that wasn't drunks would clear away the mess. And let me tell you now, if it wasn't for the wives of the alcoholics of them days back in the mid-30s and early 40s, we wouldn't be around. Because they were the ones that was in service. They were the ones that were setting up the room and giving the sandwiches and the coffee and the tea and clearing away. And they would leave the husbands just talk about their alcoholism. And eventually they formed what they call another fellowship of Al-Anon. And Al-Anon was the families of the alcoholic to talk about the problems the husbands and the wives brought. What do we do about it? How do we become codependent? What part were they playing in the alcoholic's life? And it went on. And eventually we got to around 1946, and Bill realized, you know, there was people phoning up about the traditions of AA. The traditions hadn't come in yet. But they would ask him, Bill, what do we do when people turn up, when there was fights in meetings, when a drunk would turn up? Who pays for the room? Who's in charge? And then he asked all these questions to answer. And Bill was about 14 years sober, and he's thinking, I don't know all the answers. And he wrote down the traditions on 1946, and they went into print on 1950. And they realized we need to have group consciences. We need to have a way of how we behave in AA. Tradition one is about the protection of the fellowship. The most important part of my life is my recovery. It comes before my wife and my children. Everything I do is it has to be around AA, because that's what's given me my life back. Now, Bill done this all of his life for 35 years. He went through a spell where he'd lost his home. And for 2 weeks, he slept on Grand Central Station on the benches, him and his wife, Lois, because they had nowhere to go. They had no money. They put their heart and soul into getting the fellowship of AA together so we could live. So we had a home to go to. So we had a place that we could find a solution to the problem we couldn't solve. And eventually he got housed, and eventually they got some money come through. And Bill bummed around for years. He couldn't get a job because people didn't trust him. He'd been 2, 3 years sober, and they still didn't trust him because he was that guy, that skeptic. He was the con man. He said he was a stock speculator, but he gambled, and then he conned a lot of people. He had to build a lot of bridges and get the trust back, and eventually people trusted him. And we got the fellowship together. We got the family, the Rockefeller family, behind us. Eventually the books were sold, and we got some money coming in. And when AA first started, we was $15,000 in debt. And let me tell you, today, that's about £250,000 a day in debt as we'd started. And the only way we got out of that debt is by the contributions that the members would give. They'd pass the hat round, they'd put $1, $2, some cents in, and it all went to their GSA. It went to pay the debts of AA to get AA back on its feet. We are a charity, a registered charity. The only ones that are leaders in the fellowship are the people in the group conscience that vote us in, the people in service. You know, the service committee that we have in this meeting and many meetings are the backbone of what we do. Many members come to the meetings every night, and they sit down and see the same faces. We're in service, we're doing the job, and they come in and they treat like their home group. But you know what? It's about giving back. It's about being part of a greater whole. I came to this group probably 5 or 6 months back. Alia got me involved in it. It's been one of the life-changing events in my recovery at 23 years, let me tell you. It's changed me. It's made me grow spiritually. It's made me more connected again. Because we go through down different paths, and we come in and out of recovery, become complacent, become lazy. We make excuses. We take our self-will back. We do all the things we shouldn't be doing. But that vital part is we need to maintain our sobriety. Getting involved in a home group, the people that are in service tonight, Nikki and Sharon and Amy, Alia, there's faces on here, Peter, people that are regular, Claire, people that put the effort in behind the scenes. Jack says people that we're bringing into the fold. Service will help keep you sober. Service will get you part of that group, part of that fellowship. I talked to people in AA about the fellowship of the Spirit. Okay, the Spirit is God or the power. The fellowship is all of you in the meeting tonight. All of you are part of that fellowship. If you make this your home group and you're a regular visitor, do service. Come and be a greeter. Come and be part of it. It will enhance your recovery tenfold. Let me tell you, tenfold. We have a three-sided triangle. It's called Unity Recovery Service. The recovery is when we go through the 12 steps. The unity is the tradition of AA. And the service is what we do now, how we give back. What can we do to the newcomer? We need to make sure this group is healthy. It's doing the right thing. It's carrying the right message. It's making it appealing. When you guys reach out, let me tell you now, the steering committee, the people in service here, we're responsible. Because we're the sober members that are going to give back. We're the sober members that are always going to be there. And when I flick back to the early days of AA, the backbone of AA was Bill Wilson. Because he was always there. He was always answering the questions. He was always giving back. It worked because he worked it. It worked because he put the effort in. And to keep that continuous sobriety, that peace of mind, that intuitive thought. We started to read about pages 82, 82 and 83. When we go into the promises of AA, let me tell you, they're amazing. We can put our heads on the pillow and we can sleep. We haven't got no worry in the world. We haven't got the police on our backs. We have the opportunity to make amends, look at our defects, change, find a power that's going to solve the problem, recover us from alcoholism. It's the gift that AA brings. It's the power of the fellowship. Without us, without you, without the individuals, we're nothing. We all need each other. We all depend upon each other. And there's an old saying that's not even AA, and it says, united we stand, divided we fall. And I've seen many come and go in AA, and I tell many people, it's like the gym, right? In the gym, you get to the 1st of January, everyone's going to go to the gym. We're all going to go there. We're going to get fit. We're going to lose a few pounds, and we're going to eat healthily. Come January, we're back on the cakes and the sweets and we're not going to the gym no more. AA is no different. People come to AA, they'll go through the first three steps, they'll get a little bit sober, they feel a little bit better. They take the foot off the gas. We need to solve the problem that we suffer with. We need to treat the condition. And that comes with commitments, doing service, working with other people. Next week, I've got four or five people that I'm sponsoring. That I'm in service to do. And sometimes I don't want to do it. I'm thinking, do you know what? I can't be bothered. I can't be asked. But if I have that attitude, I don't stay sober. I didn't get sober this long by not doing that stuff. And it's enjoyable to watch people grow, to watch people change. All of you on the screen tonight, I've seen you all change, all grow. Tonight, who I'm looking at, the biggest change tonight is Scott. Scott's changed dramatically. Because I see that in people. I watch them change. I watch them get active. Amy, very shy and quiet to start with. Now, all can do is hear her. She's so loud. It's fantastic. Because the character comes out. We enhance that.
Thank you.
We enhance that by the comfortability, by the fellowship. But, you know, we talk about God. I'm going to finish on this. You know, we talk about what is God. I'm 23 years. I don't know what my God is. I don't know what the power is. I know all the time I pray to it, all the time I'm not in control and in charge, seems to work all right. I don't need to be the boss. I don't need to be the best. I don't need to be number one. I can be humble. I can sit in the background. It doesn't really matter to me. Keith's will wants to run and control the show. God's will to me is what it is. It will be what it will be. All I have to do is be a participant in life. A participant in AA and an active service member. Thank you.